This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Greetings. As you'll know, my old man said likes to seek out more constructive sponsors for our listeners rather than the typical gambling sponsorship of most football media. So in the spirit of that, I want to thank Penfold for coming on board as a supporter of the My Old Man Said podcast. Penfold is a pension company I found during the pandemic when I realised it might actually be a good idea to get a pension. And being self-employed, Penfold actually specialises in self-employed. And the interesting thing is 86% of self-employed people don't actually contribute to a pension, and only 31% of self-employed people actually have a pension set up compared to 99% of their standard workforce counterparts. So if you are self-employed, or if you actually run your own business and want pensions for your work staff, or if you're a job hopper or have a side hustle, then Penfold offers the kind of flexibility and simplicity that should be right up your street, as well as being able to increase, decrease payments or put them on ice or make ad hoc payments. You get the 25% government tax bonus on top of whatever you put in. You also have six different plans you can select to invest your money, which are run by the likes of BlackRock. And through their investment, the interest compounds. So as well as that 25% tax bonus, you have compound interest. And that's why obviously most people get pensions as the backbone to their long-term investment. If you've got any pensions from previous jobs, you can actually add them to the pot as well, and Penfold will do all the hard work behind that. And as a listener to the show, if you use the code MOMS when you sign up, Penfold will actually give you a £50 bonus in your pension to help get things started. Go to getpenfold.com/moms, and as I said, use the code MOMS when you sign up and you'll get £50 in your pension. With pensions, as with all investments, your capital is at risk. The value of what you put in may go up as well as down. Like me, if you are self-employed, it's definitely worth checking out, and only takes literally 5 minutes to set up and requires no deep financial knowledge or anything like that. In 5 minutes, you can have a pension all set up, all ran from an app on your phone, so you can keep tabs on it wherever you are. Very simple. Gives you that peace of mind that you're actually making efforts towards your long-term future. Right, with that, on with the show. Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me for the only Aston Villa show dedicated to the lamest 10 minutes of football I've probably witnessed at Villa Park, Mr. Chris Budd, Mr. Phil Shaw, welcome back.
What an intro. Hello.
Hello.
Still raw, mate.
We've left it a day just to simmer away. Before we started recording, I lit a candle to mark the death of our defence as a solid unit.
RIP, the back three.
Oh, we're going to get onto that in the main part of the show. How are you guys anyway? I saw you, Mr. Budd, before the game. We were in town for a quick drink, and we came across the Wolves squad.
And their chef. Yeah.
And their private chef standing outside the Grand Hotel, and they were backing in their coaches. I don't know if they were picking the players up. I don't know if they did like a team briefing in there, but you know.
Yeah, I think they probably had their team meeting, I would have thought. They wouldn't have been, surely wouldn't stay over for a game that's half an hour away.
They've obviously got a bit of money in the bank if they're kind of paying for that clean air charges. They're not, you know, they could have driven those coaches around the outskirts of Birmingham, maybe.
Yeah, make them walk in from the ring road.
They were shameless, just straight through the centre, parking up. And that was weird, walking past in the private chef of the Wolves team and everybody outside. So they don't trust the Grand Hotel culinary staff, it seems. Phil Shaw, what's happening over your end?
Not much, just sort of...
Oh, give us something to chew on.
I just consoled myself with a bit of TV, a bit of binge-watching. After it there, I found a show called Kings of Pain, which is about...
Fitting.
Yes, that's exactly it. I wanted someone else to suffer more than I was suffering. So that's these two guys, and they just go looking for the world's most deadly creatures to let them just sting them and see how sore it is. So, yeah.
But how did that finish in the last 10 minutes?
Yeah, well... But five episodes of that, I didn't feel just as bad, so it was good watching.
Yeah, before we rock on, I did notice just before the 80th minute, some guy going up the stairs to the vomitory to leave on the 80th minute in K4 when Villa were 2-0 up. So that begs the philosophical question, was he right? You know, maybe he just went off because he had to go on holiday or something. So to all intents and purposes, he still thinks Villa won the game at the weekend. He maybe hasn't checked the internet or the news. But it begs the question, was he right in doing that? Or can we blame him for not staying and supporting his team and, you know, making sure they got the win over the line?
I don't mind. At the end of the day, you know, everyone has an excuse. Sometimes they've got to get off early, etc. But if someone's leaving early, so be it. We've all done it. I've walked out in disgust when we've been like 3-0 down or whatever. But my gripe was the mass exodus at 2-2 on 85 minutes. When it's like, this is game right on now. If the team needs you ever, it's now. Bear in mind, Ings still had the big chance, didn't he? It's like, what are you doing?
They needed us at 2-0, mate.
I mean, let's be frank before we get on. The atmosphere was garbage, wasn't it? For a derby game, a so-called derby game, was crap.
Let's not put people off this show. Right, coming up, the Villa News. We have Media Muppets, which goes beyond the Villa sphere this week to 3 points. And then we'll go straight into this. We've got some venting to do. We've got some people to kick up the ass. There's a whole bloody queue of them. So let's blaze through this opener and then get into the carnage. Right, let's start off with, well, let's have some news. Shall we talk about South Eastern train services being taken over by the government or Villa news?
Well, I want the Villa news then.
I mean, I'm still tormented by South Eastern train services when I used to use them regularly. The government should terminate them. That's what they should do. Just nuclear option, destroy them and build it up from the bottom again. Anyway, I digress. Villa news, it is... Right then, the COVID checks, I don't know if they've been introduced or they've been stepped up. I mean, I wasn't checked. I didn't see anybody check when I went in. Did you?
I think it was a bit of a soft opening, shall we say.
Yeah, a bit of a soft opening. I mean, I've been to Spurs' stadium twice in recent weeks, obviously for the Villa away game and the NFL, and I was spot checked for the football, and then I saw the people in front of me spot checked in the NFL, so, you know, evidence that it was existing there, but I didn't see anything at Villa Park. Meanwhile, good news is Sanson was back on the bench. I think we're in need of options in the midfield, that is, so hopefully... he's back at it. Don't expect to see Bailey at Arsenal. He's not even training yet, is he? So that might be at least another week. If we see him at all before the international break.
If we see him at all.
Ever again.
Well, let's not be that hard. I mean, his injury records over his career is not that bad. So, I think he might miss the Arsenal game. Another game he would have been useful in, as I always like to say. Smith said in an interview, I think in the pre-match for the Wolves game, that there was a waiting list of 18,000. He makes the figures up. The boy does. I remember at the fan consultation group where we were told the exact figure. This is obviously going back a couple of months, and it was 13,000. And then the next day, Smith is talking about it, and he quotes a figure of 15,000. And it's like, no, it's not, because, you know, they actually told us the legit number. You need to be a bit responsible, because then, you know, with what you say, because then that's taken as sacrosanct. And, you know, since those lower figures, obviously the list has gone down by about 2,000. And I don't think if it's 13,000 and then it went down 2,000 because of people on the list picking up season tickets, I can't see suddenly 7,000 coming out of nowhere impressed by a thunderbolt of a start to the season. I don't really see that. So he might need to be careful what he's saying in terms of figures. I did some checking at a meeting with the Football Supporters Association over Villa's protocol on ticket reselling. The main gripe with that was the lack of consultation, but I just wanted to see if it was deemed, compared to other clubs, as acceptable treatment of fans. And they said it was actually quite mild compared to the likes of what Spurs and Manchester United do in terms of banning, etc.
Yeah, and over in Europe, I mean, Ajax actually recently tracked down, it was 25 people who tried to resell their ticket for their recent Dortmund game, obviously quite big profits, and they actually blocked their season tickets, gave them a €450 fine, and have given them an 18-month stadium ban.
I think the fine thing, that would make people trying to sell on, that would make them shit their pants a bit more, I think.
What it means, there's no monetary gain to have if you get caught. You're banned and you're losing money.
Before the Wolves game, the under-23s were at St Andrews. I think some fans went to both games or tried to go to both games. I don't know if that's... I don't think it was en masse at all.
There was a few hundred Villa went there. There was a reasonable turnout, apparently. We had more there than them, unsurprisingly.
Well, that goes without saying, doesn't it? But the under-23s won 2-1. Right, not that much in the Villa news stakes, so let's have some media muppetry. Right, what's in the media muppets trough this week, Phil?
Well, with all the media obsessed with the recent Newcastle takeover, I saw a headline in Sports Bible that would have been real statement of intent. The headline read, "Zinedine Zidane has responded to Newcastle United's managerial advances." And this was written by Tom Fenn. Yeah, I know. Imagine him rocking up.
The game places now.
Yeah, this was written by Tom Fenton. So I was wondering, like, has Zidane sold his soul, or has he distanced himself from the sports washing nightmare that's going on in the Northeast?
Their fans were chanting in the Spurs game how they've got more money than Manchester City and PSG and all that kind of stuff. They're proud of it.
The must have money, they were able to get Ant and Dec there as well. But truth be told, when you looked into the article, Zinedine Zidane has done neither. When you go into it, the Sports Bible got their information from the Daily Mirror. And whenever you go into that again, there's no quotes from Zidane, there's nothing. There's just a vague reference to him supposedly wanting to take on the French job. In fact, the only reference in the Mirror article, which is the one that the whole Sports Bible one is based on, is one line. Zinedine Zidane has already also rebuffed soundings, believing he could become the France manager. That's it. So one line spawns a whole article again.
Again, it's everybody's, you don't need to write articles now. It is literally random sentences from other newspapers, isn't it, that actually have nothing to do with the headline now. That's what you can get away with nowadays. It's I think it's time to set up some bots to run the My Old Man Said website, actually. Ridiculous, isn't it? Right, on to 3 points. Point number one, Sport Radar Integrity Services, a partner to more than 100 sporting federations and leagues, has used its betting monitoring system, the Universal Fraud Detection System, to find suspicious activity across 12 sports in more than 70 countries. According to these figures, football is the sport most at risk of corruption, obviously linked to betting, and the technology has flagged 500 suspicious matches this year. 40% of matches in domestic competitions found in like third tier leagues and below. Also, youth football. I mean, this is where, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, when match fixers and rackets are set up, it is mainly on games that are under the radar, isn't it? I mean, apart from Villa Wolves, which...
yeah, I was going to say, I was hoping they'd have been there.
A lot of money going on Wolves to win it when Villa were 2-0 up. Very suspicious activity.
Oh, that's where the back three disappeared to, the bookies.
This is why I always thought it was important to get VAR right, because at the end of the day, you need some reassurance against the potential of corruption, because you know we've seen it in the Italia League with Juventus. I mean, sometimes the biggest con jobs are done in plain sight on the biggest stage, and you know, nobody expects the Premier League, but of course, you know, you wouldn't be surprised if there was an announcement. So that's why I always thought VAR has a role to play, at the very least, in hopefully curtailing that. Point number two, FIFA want some more money off EA Sports, it seems. EA Sports obviously have the name FIFA on their, probably their biggest game, is it not? One of their biggest games,
yeah,
at least.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Between that and Call of Duty, I'd say they're the two biggest franchises in gaming.
They've had it since 1993, but FIFA wants more.
Yes, they do. Yeah. It all comes down to money. I mean, EA pays for the rights of the name FIFA to use on its game and four-year cycles to coincide with World Cup cycles. But FIFA are actually wanting $1 billion for it this term, which is more than double the previous amount. Just for a bit of context, EA in 1 year from FIFA made $1.62 billion from just its Ultimate Team game mode, so it can't afford it.
Wow.
Yeah, but after EA made this price rise public and registered a new trademark called EA Sports FC, FIFA have hit back with their own press release saying that no one game should have a monopoly of their brand. But it's one of those ones with the money involved, you'd expect that this will get sorted. I mean, it's a recognisable worldwide name, FIFA, as a game, so I can't see EA giving it up.
Well, maybe they can do a deal with UEFA and rebrand it as UEFA for half the price.
If anything, EA Sports have probably got more integrity as a name than FIFA anyway.
Be careful what you say in public. We don't know. Point number three, a stand. This has happened recently this weekend. A stand in NEC Nijmegen, is it their Gofurt Stadium, buckled on Sunday as Vitesse Arnhem fans celebrated their 1-0 away league win. Fans were jumping up and down in unison, and if you see the pictures, it just seems to bend down, doesn't it?
It's just like snaps in half, doesn't it?
Yeah, all the fans are kind of laughing about it, and the players are in front of them kind of celebrating. Fortunately, there was nobody injured there, but that's why you should stay in your seats and not get up and not celebrate things. You've just got to be careful.
Okay, Mr. Purslow.
Yes, no, we don't need safe standing, just safe seating. Joking aside, good job nobody was injured there. But yeah, it's amazing what jumping fans can do to concrete. Bizarre.
Shows what a probably pretty basic stand that'll be. That'll be shut for a while, I'm sure.
Yeah, this sounds a bit like St. Andrews to me. They've had structural problems as well. Right, talking about problems. Let's get into main show.
Where to start?
Well, as we said in Something for the Weekend, Villa, a reasonably poor record against the Dogheads recently in the league. Only one win in seven. This is across the Premier League and Championship.
Yeah, we hadn't won at Villa Park in the league since 2003. It was O'Leary.
Yeah, which is not a good look at all. Smith kept with the 3-5-2, but beefed it up a bit with Buendia coming in. Tuanzebe came in, obviously, instead of Courtney House. But the surprise was Douglas Luiz starting. I didn't think he was going to make it. I thought he was just going to be on the bench. Martinez was, as expected, you know, he's a keeper. What is the situation, by the way, on that?
Yeah, so basically, as I understand it, they're allowed to play because they are going from one biosecure bubble into another. So when they fly back into the UK, they've obviously come from the Argentina or the Brazilian bubble. They fly back to England where they enter the Villa one, and then within their family. So they can't go out, you know, go into the shops, etc. But they can obviously stay at home, training ground or the stadium, is my understanding of it.
Yeah, I think Martinez got even luckier than that, because Argentina came off the red list, so he's clear. I think Brazil's still in the red list. Yeah.
Ah, right. Okay. But you know, that comes in later on when we talk about substitutions. The first half, it was a lame half, but it reminded me, you know, it was like the Everton game, the first half against Everton, where it just looked like it was shuttling, you know, along for a 0-0 or a kind of a low scoring 1-0. This formation, this 3-5-2. When it first broke, people were saying, oh, it's so negative, it's just five at the back. But this is not the way we play it at all. It is definitely three at the back. And most of the time when we've got the ball, it is three at the back. And those two wing-backs are pushed up high. And this is...
Especially Cash.
Yeah. This is where the problems start later on. But it does give you like a foothold high up the pitch. And it gives you that sense of you're in control, but nothing's happening. This is what I've been feeling from the last few games. You know, even the Spurs, the first 20 minutes, you think we're actually in control of this game, but why aren't we doing anything about it? And you know, bar that Danny Ings chance, where I suppose you got to credit the keeper for coming out, but it does dispel the cliche of just give him a chance and he scores.
He's not that deadly.
You need to give him two.
Should Adama Traore for Wolves, to be fair.
Yeah, but his end product's not.
No, he'd kind of done the hard work.
It's a bit hit and miss,
Ours would have been a bit of a pitchy book goal. It was a lovely ball through from Buendia, wasn't it?
Traore,
you could argue, was just a bit of a net defending and an inability to just put your body on the line and take him down.
In the first half, I was trying to work out where Traore was actually playing. Was he playing centre-forward? Was he playing in midfield? He was
basically roaming, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was all over the shop.
Yeah, I can't believe on his Maisie run that about six of our players tried exactly the same tackle, this like throw a leg just in front of him. And if you're Adama Traore at the speed he goes at and the size he is, he just bulldozes straight through them.
And the quantity of oil you've got on you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it was shades of Maradona against England in 86, where all the challenges were half-assed. It's just like, well, just, you know, go through him. They only go through players when there's like injury time and it's around our box. That's the only time they decide to give away the tactical foul. There was a chance to take a proper tactical foul in, you know, midfield, where it wouldn't have been as much as a threat. I think you know what I'm referencing there.
Yes.
If you look at the foul count in the match, just to back that up, Villa only committed 8 fouls in the match compared to Wolves 17. So tells a story.
But, you know, I thought Buendia was kind of easing into it, and he is tidy, but I don't think he's seeing as much as the ball as I would like. I mean, he's tidy with the ball. You know, pass completion was like 90%, the best of any Villa player.
I joked in Match Club that he needs a set of wing mirrors on him, because while he's got the ball and he's going forward with it, he's great. He just does seem that he doesn't seem to be aware of what's directly behind him at times in the first half. He was getting caught or, you know, Wolves players were coming up from behind him. Either he wasn't getting a shout or he just wasn't as aware. And somebody with all the creative ability he has, usually that's one of their strengths, and knowing what's around them.
Yeah, sometimes he got the ball back off them. He's quite good at, I mean, it's probably because of his slight frame, how he can position himself in front of the player, in between the player and the ball. And he robbed a couple of players with that kind of technique. But yeah, is it Arsene Wenger that said great players like look up, scan the area, scan the pitch 7 or 9 times before they receive the ball? Maybe you need average ones do it like 3 times.
Yeah, well, the top players, they always see the big picture developing quite quickly. That's one of those things of like footballing intelligence they always talk about. They see the picture develop and they see the pass before it comes.
And they know where everybody is because they're constantly scanning the pitch where everybody is.
And I think that can also be helped by, you know, if your team has a tactical system that you look at like Barca in their pomp, they always knew every triangle on the pitch and where the patterns of play were because they were so well drilled. Villa aren't at that level yet. And, you know, you had like sort of Luiz and Buendia, who actually I thought were very tidy in the first half, but you could see that the Wolves three of Dendonca, Moutinho, Neves, who've got experience between them, they were very narrow. And we were trying to play through their lines. You thought, well, there's just no space. You need to get it wide. You need to move the ball quickly, which wasn't happening. And McGinn was kind of playing a little bit deeper in the first half. Obviously, when Smith clearly pushed him on in the second, and that's where the goal came from, which we'll come on to in a minute. But we just needed that little bit of extra sort of, I don't know, tempo or a little bit of extra sharpness. Because actually, we got into their final third on a few occasions and we were actually quite wasteful when we got into good positions.
Yeah. And, you know, second half, 2 goals, 2-0. You're thinking, this is going to be 3 or 4. And, you know, I mentioned the guy leaving 80 minutes. He probably had been waiting for a third and fourth, but they didn't turn up. So he just thought, yeah, it's game. They're settling for this. So off he went. Wolves just didn't look like they were going to be a threat. They just had Traore doing a bit here and there. But we've seen Traore come to Villa Park since he's left us many times and just flattered to deceive. And it seemed like this would be not the most exhilarating of wins, but a reasonably comfortable one.
Yeah, it was very like the Newcastle game at home. I mean, it was 2-0 about the same stage of the game, and it just sort of fizzled out. I mean, it just makes me worry now what would have happened if Newcastle had have got that penalty that was ruled out in their game. Would they have done a comeback as well?
Yeah, I mean, Ings' goal, I enjoyed that because we had a good view in the upper Holt. You could see him, you know, you were tracking his run from...
Sort of ghosted in, didn't he?
Yeah.
It's a really good goal, actually. McGinn did very, very well. It's a absolutely perfect ball in. He dispatches it superbly. It's a really good goal.
Yeah, and then the second goal that McGinn won, I mean, it was massive deflection.
I think the thing is with McGinn that we don't see as much as we'd like, you know, him in and around the box taking pot shots, because he's obviously got a thunderbolt of a left foot, but it's so infrequent you see him. It always seems to fall on his right foot, or he has to switch it onto his left, whereas actually he just takes the shot on first time, and you think, well, if you take the shot, you allow for things like that to happen.
He was the, let's say, the kind of the spark or the conductor at times.
He was our standout player. You know, the stats for him, he had 7 crosses, the most chances created, the most take-ons, the most tackles, a goal and an assist. I mean, it was a man-of-the-match performance from McGinn, especially in the second half. He deserved to be on the winning side, but...
It was very much the spark in terms of pulling, you know, everybody else up by the scruff of the neck. Yeah.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, he was.
But then the roots of what happened, I think you can find in the Spurs game, because when Watkins scored against Spurs, it was 1-1, then the game's management went to shit.
We just switched off.
As I mentioned, the centre-back thing, when it was first announced, people were going, oh, this is negative from Smith. You know, why is he doing this? This is going to be 5-3-2. Well, actually, that's when it should be a 5-3-2. Against Spurs, we should have... Because the problem is, for me anyway, Target and Cash are getting too far up the pitch. So that takes Konsa out to the right and it takes Mings out to the left. And then suddenly there's either gaps there or Konsa's too far out right. Mings is having to... because they're getting in behind the back of Target. So Mings is having to come across to meet the danger on the wing, and then that creates a problem of where's Konsa's position, because does he come in and make up a two, like a central two with two and Zabi? But you know, what about the guy on the right flank, because he's ahead of Cash? It's creating all this kind of positional trauma, and we saw it against Chelsea the first time. People for some reason really, you know, pick on Mings. I thought Mings was in the first half, he was snuffing out the danger. Mings was, there was like maybe 3 times at moments he extinguished it before it had a chance to get going. But then he's 2-0, he's playing like a celebrity charity golf or something, and some of his clearances are like sliced casual golf shots.
It's probably the word, David, all over the field, to be fair. It was casual. I mean, we were casual in the first half, really. The amount of times we gave the ball away. I think I said to you at halftime, I certainly said to Dan, who sits next to me, that the only way Wolves are going to score here is if we play ourselves into trouble again. And we did it four or five times in the first half, kind of got away with it. And the second half, we just invited them on. You know, at 2-0, you think, well, okay, you haven't got Bailey, but you can kind of manage the game. And if you want to hit on the break, there's probably a third here if you want to get it. Or you can kind of go the other way, a bit more like how sort of Bruce used to play. And as you said, you go to a back five and you go, actually, we're two up. We're going to shut this down as a contest. You went, bearing in mind, Buendia's run his race. Louise has run his race. So in the middle of the park, actually, they're three lads who are experienced and probably, I would say, superior to us on the ball. They're starting to get on top. And that was happening before, really, we got the second goal against the run of play, let's be honest. Yeah. So it wasn't like we were flattening them in the second half. We got the first. They weren't doing a lot, but they had a lot of the ball and were growing into the game. And we kind of, because of the subs that were probably forced upon Smith, I don't necessarily think we got to make a proactive move. Although I actually thought at the time, Louise van der Kamer, just to freshen it up, was probably the right move.
Yeah, I didn't have any problem with that because you're thinking a bit more defensive. But just to continue the formation of this three centre-back thing. So you've got a situation, I mean, the second goal, Konsa is in no man's land. He doesn't know whether to go out right. I don't know where the fuck Cash is. So he's got two to occupy his mind. But in the middle is just opened up. Like I said, with these fullbacks pushing on and kind of staying quite high up, you've got Mings coming over to the left-hand side. Problem is, as we're finding out, Mings, his best role is the man who meets the danger in the centre. So now we've got Axel Tuanzebe, and he's a bit powder puff. I mean, he
certainly can be.
One of their goals was he was out-muscled. And if that was Mings, Mings would have sorted that one out. And that's because Mings is being pulled over to the side. Now, on the second goal, Konsa was in no man's land, and he was in no man's land for one of the Chelsea goals. I mean, he gets this golden pass every time there's an England call-up. Everybody's calling for Konsa. But in this formation, I don't think he instinctively knows where he should be.
No.
So if we're ahead and we need points, we should be settling down, switching to a back four, and then probably taking off one of those centre-backs to switch into the back four and bringing on Nakamba to add an extra, you know, screen on that back four in front of them.
I think Mings is getting the brunt of it because of the yellow card he got for time wasting, because it's just an easy thing to pick on him for, because the referee warns him about time wasting, and it's almost as if, well, Mings is thinking, you're not going to book me, and then the referee goes, well, I'm going to book you now. So that's just, people have seen the online especially have like sort of jumped on that to say it was casual, it was bad attitude, they would have substituted Mings straight away. I mean, they're talking nonsense. It wasn't smart from Mings, but you know, they're using that and missing Tuanzebe being like a ghost in the box for the most of the second half, and like you said, Konsa just being pulled everywhere.
Yeah, so I don't know, I'm not convinced about that formation when it's defending, because again, you know, against Spurs, Son just ran that channel between the fullback and the outside center back, which causes a confusion, you know, like Cons is thinking, do I go for this? Is this Cash's? You know, what's going on? And it's so much clearly more defined. This, you know, our back four was our success story. First of all, it saved us once it was organised in Project Restart. And then last season, it was pretty solid, and we were actually lacking in our forward play. And that's what cost us, you know, ultimately a top half finish. But, you know, you've got Mings meeting the danger and Konsa astutely sweeping up around him. But that's now Konsa's in no man's land. Axel doesn't provide that muscle, and he gets out-muscled. And then you've got, you know, Mings who's being pulled out of... You need Mings central, or else you're weak.
Yeah,
and you want Mings in the middle for his sort of his leadership, his communication, etc.
Him out there playing left back is, you know, it's no good. You know, this is when we're up against it, by the way. This is when we've got the points in the bag, and we've lost 4 points because of this back three.
A lack of game management, really.
Yeah, you're saying there, Tuanzebe getting out-muscled. I mean, there was one towards the end, just before Wolves got their winner, that Fabio Silva, 19-year-old streak of piss, if you want to call him that, he manages to send Tuanzebe flying. And if Michael Oliver hadn't been, you know, feeling sorry for Tuanzebe and blew up for a free kick, which it never was, you know,
he'd
been straight
it,
on the goal.
Yeah,
because that streak of piss, when he's played against us previously, it has literally been that.
Frankly, he didn't need to be good against us, though. That was the annoying thing.
It was weird. It was almost like we were inviting them. But there's another thing, and it's come back. I mean, this started with Di Matteo. It's the old leaving nobody up when we're defending corners. And this was a great example of this situation. So, you know, I'm talking about when the opposition's got a corner, all 11 Villa players are in the box defending it. There's no out ball. There's nothing to make the opposition think, oh shit, we better keep two players back. Because the rule of thumb is, if you keep a player up, then they need to leave two to deal with the threat.
Especially when you've got Watkins and Ings. You know, Watkins, you've got a natural out ball.
So if you looked at what Wolves were doing, they were leaving Adama Traore on the halfway line and Villa automatically left two players back. Wolves were allowed, and this, I don't understand it. I asked Steve Bruce this because he carried on, Di Matteo started it. Then Steve Bruce was carrying on, and I asked Steve Bruce in, you know, fan consultation group meeting, what is the logic behind this? And he just said, it's the modern game. It's, you know, what everybody's doing.
I think there doesn't seem to be a lot of independent thought when it comes to the coaching and things like that on set pieces.
Now, I would be leaving Watkins up top because Watkins can run at players and he's got pace, so he's a great out ball. Now, Watkins in the box on his own 6-yard line, I mean, he fucked up, didn't he? I think it was their second goal.
The first one, him and Ings.
Yeah.
And they had their defined role because we got done on both of them, really. It was in second phase. The first ball comes in, you get rid of it, and it comes back in. You think you just switched off, the guy's running. Yeah, it's a smart ball, but one you'd expect them to make. But because Ings and Watkins have drifted into a bad position, they're just bad team goals.
But if you leave Watkins on the halfway line, then his contribution there is he's already taken two Wolves players out of that picture who are pushing to get back in the game. So I don't understand it.
No.
And all three of their goals from set pieces, you know, be it second phase on some of them, and you know, we score a goal from any set piece, and Nanny McPhee, as I call him, gets, you know, the lazy pundits, stroke fans, you know, say, oh, this is a mark of genius. But every club plays at set pieces. I mean, you saw Connor Cody at the end of the game in his interview talking about how they really, really concentrate on second phase stuff off set pieces.
Because it's a big part of the game. It's not a mystery.
Yeah, it's not as if we've got this special McPhee coach, and I think we've stumbled on a secret here that might give us a competitive advantage. Every fucker's doing it.
Yeah, it's been Villa's Achilles heel now since they came back into the Premier League, that second phase, because it reminded me of the two goals Liverpool scored later on. Because once Wolves found something that worked, just keep trying it, just keep doing it, knock it in.
So would you leave somebody on the halfway line? Would you leave Watkins
always.
Or Bailey? Yeah, always. Well, That's what I'm thinking.
Watkins isn't a tall guy. And also, when you've got, especially if you are going to play a back three, and you've got Twan Zabi, who's tall, Mings and Konza, they're all good in the air, and you've got Martinez, who is more than capable of coming and catching or punching, you've got to trust them to do their job in the same way that you trust Ings and Watkins at the other end.
Yeah, because if you've got a 6-footer, and let's say you've got a Drogba playing centre forward, then he's actually useful to have in that box defending, and it's an extra
Watkins
big man.
Is of no use.
So Watkins, 100%, that quick throw out from Martinez, and Watkins' pace and his ability to run at people, you're at the races straight away. You're relieving pressure easily, and you're getting rid of that second phase problem, because if everybody's encamped in that 18-yard box, a little header or a flick out, it's coming straight back in, isn't it?
Yep.
But if you've got Watkins on the halfway line and you just give it some when you clearance, you know he's up there. So everybody in that 18-yard box knows subconsciously they've got to give it a bit of leather, and Watkins will be on the end chasing it down.
You know, regardless of it being a set piece or not, when they have possession, when you're turning up with 10 minutes to go, Watkins is your out ball. Anyway, you should be managing the game and hitting the corners. So if you can't hold on to the ball and sort of slow the game down if you want to, which frankly we just don't seem to be capable of at the moment, and when your two best ball players in Luiz and Buendia are off the field, you've got to turn Wolves around and you've got to hit the corners and go, okay, we're going to have to play a little bit of territory here and make Wolves play out from the back. We kind of just went, all right, we're going to have five lads, we're going to retreat to our 18-yard line. And then because they've made, I think it was like a double change, wasn't it? Really positive move, bringing the two forwards on with obviously Jimenez. And then you've invited them on. Wolves are like, wow, they've just gifted us a goal. We know we're in business now.
Yep.
It was a real air of inevitability.
There was. And it was weird. I remember at 2-0, I think when that guy walked out of K4, I looked over to the Wolves fans and, you know, to a man, they're all still there. And I'm thinking,
what are they doing that we don't?
I thought they would have fucked off by now, or some of them, you know, when you, local derby and disgust stuff, off you go.
They were probably giving it 5 minutes.
And then I was thinking, what do they know that we don't know? Because it soon became apparent, oh, yeah, it's like we haven't got a game management game plan here. We're just allowing them. It was weird. It was almost like they were walking the ball into the net. Yeah. It's not as if they were shooting from, 20 yards or whatever. They were literally scoring, within our 6-yard box kind of territory.
No, and that's where it is. I mean, does it come down to this naivety again that even when it went to 2-each, that Villa were still bombing forward looking for the winner? I mean, if it gets to 2-each, the thing you think is, right, just don't lose it now. I mean, a draw is bad enough. It's nearly as bad as a defeat, but don't lose it.
Do you know what? I mean, I don't mind that.
Yeah, I don't mind that. I think you're at home, you're kind of going for the win.
Yeah, and you've still got, guys on the field. It's not like you're down to 10 men. I get it if it's 2-all, you're down to 10 men. You think, actually, we take the point here, or if you're away from home. But actually, you're at home. The onus is on you. Bearing in mind, our set-piece delivery had been pretty good. Ings had a huge chance just before stoppage time where he heads over, where, frankly, he almost had too much time. He should hit the target. I think if he hits the target, he scores. And then, of course, you go on to win the game.
They only scored a wickedly deflected free kick. So in terms of that, chasing the winner from Villa's point of view, I think it's fair enough. What I will say, though, is, we mentioned match fixing earlier on. So the second game in succession where Villa have been heading for a draw and Matt Target's put it in his own net. Coincidence? There's a bit of a theme going on. What kind of betting network has he signed up to that he's on the payroll of, is what I'm asking. You know what Jurgen Klopp said? Deflected goals are bad blocks unless they're done on purpose.
Yeah. No, it's just, I think the third goal, I said as soon as Ramsey, appallingly, by the way, I might add, tackled Traore, bearing in mind, normally with Traore, you let him run.
Track back to the subs. So in terms of the substitutions, now this is where the game folded in. I mean, it's whether it's coincidence or not. Now, who was the first to go? Luiz, wasn't it?
Luiz and the Campbell was the first one, yeah. It was just before the second goal, actually.
You understand that, and you don't really have much of an issue there. Luiz's run his race, he's flown over. Nakamba, you'd probably bring on anyway just to see out the game. That's the logic, isn't it?
Yeah, I was fine with that. Especially when we just brought him on, and within about 30 seconds we went and got the second goal. We thought, great, this has worked out perfectly for us now.
Now, is Ramsey coming on for Buendia? Is that Smith thinking, we're 2-0 up here, we're home and dry, let's keep his confidence up by bringing him on so he doesn't feel like he's now been replaced?
No, he said that Buendia was requesting to come off, wasn't he? Buendia would run his race as well. Yeah. Buendia was asking to come off, so Buendia would run his race as well. They were running on... I mean, that's the thing. You saw Wolves' midfield grow and grow and grow into the game because our lads just ran out of steam.
We need access to his running stats. Buendia.
This is what I say. It's like, what are they doing during the week? Because these are the lads that weren't on international duty.
He had 44 touches. I don't know how many, he wasn't doing anything, especially in terms of running around like a blue-ass fly, was he?
No. But actually, even the Ramsey, when you think, if it's just a case of fresh legs... Ramsey, as we know, gets around. He's good when he can put his foot on the ball. He can kind of carry the ball if needed. He's kind of had little moments of quality in the start of the season, but maybe it was a Sanson moment. I don't know. On paper, the three changes were all quite logical moves. Really. And obviously, Cash had a dead leg. If one of your fullbacks is injured, you bring Ashley Young on. So people sort of slating Smith for the changes, I think it's a little bit harsh on Smith because I don't think the defeat was down to the substitutions. It was down to game management and other things.
The only thing about those substitutions were they allowed the formation to stay the same. I mean, if he's bringing on somebody else for Buendia, then he would need to change the formation up. So that's maybe the only fault. Maybe it did need a different formation once it was 2-0 up.
Yeah, I think personally, if Cash was dead legging, I would have just gone to a back four with Konsa at right back, maybe two and Zabi actually at right back.
I like Konsa at right back though, because he stands his ground well, doesn't he? He ain't going to bomb on, but you've got a very solid flat back four.
Two and Zabi at right back's all right, and then you've got that solid centre. But the main thing is to bring in that extra midfielder because, they were getting on top of us a little bit there, their three, just to nullify that. But, one thing I will say about if you're going to substitute a fullback in the next game, I would 100% take Target off with 10 minutes to go because I don't want him conceding another deflected goal because then I would be very suspicious about this betting corruption thing that's going on. I mean, you look at Ramsey's stats. I mean, pass completion, and this is based on 7 touches, so I think this is just getting his foot in mainly because it's 33%. He hasn't really been on the ball. Yeah, exactly. And... I mean, that's the key thing. And that foul he gave away, I mean, it's, you know, it's happened. What can you say? And they only scored because of the wicked deflection.
It did feel inevitable, though, when the free kick got completely. I said to the guys around me, we know how this plays out now. I mean, to be honest, the only surprise for me was that Neves didn't stick it in the top corner.
Yeah, because he's more than capable, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a very good player.
Yeah.
You know, when Villa have performed as they have in that 10-minute period, the inevitability comes and you kind of go, actually, do you know what? As much as we should have won this game, we're going to deserve what we get here.
So it's going to be interesting now to see if, in terms of game management, which Smith highlighted as well, I mean, this starts from the Spurs game onwards, if he'll make any changes, and also what happens with this 3-5-2. Because as we've said before, that formation, you can see now why he got Axel to Nzabian. You can see why he went for Danny Ings. I think Danny Ings, Watkins, and then one of the wide guys, be it Bailey or whoever, could play in a three up front. I don't see an issue with that.
Yep.
Like a pretty fluid three. I mean, people have mentioned the comparison of Liverpool and how they set out.
Yep.
Where they haven't really got wingers. They've got forwards that can play out wide. And they're
all
switch.
Mobile, aren't they, across the front line?
And Ings, I mean, that's one thing that people may forget about Ings. He can drop off. He can,
His link-up play is good.
Very mobile, good link-up play, and plenty of energy. So I don't know if Smith has earmarked this formation, and it only played against Wolves because we didn't have Bailey to call on. I just want Bailey fit, so then we can see what he's really intent on, because you can't have a fit Bailey and not play him.
No, absolutely not.
No.
He's box office. And even Traore on his day. I mean, we saw enough moments last season with Traore that you think he can change a game.
Yeah, with Traore, if you're playing that 3-5-2, Traore is going to be limited in terms of getting on the field. I mean, the only way you can actually see him getting on the pitch is if you're really chasing the game and you're taking off your wing back.
Well, that's what happened with Everton, didn't he? He took Target off for Bailey. So Bailey almost played as like a token wing back, but just said, Here's a free roll on the left. Go and bomb on.
So will the 3-5-2 be reserved for Manchester United Old Trafford only? And leave it at that.
Yeah.
The key is Bailey. Once he's back fit, then we'll see what the real true intentions are.
Yeah, it's just a game like this. It's a shame. It's not just the isolated incident. It's the, you don't want to say the narrative because it's a cliche, but it's what it gives to other teams playing Villa for the rest of the season. Now, it's like, even if they're one or two down, it's just like, right, start lumping the ball into the box. Just start, you know, putting a bit of pressure in Villa. And unless they do something to change that it could happen again. I mean, I won't say it'll be as drastic as two.
We went through that period, didn't we? A long period where Villa fans would have their hearts in their mouth in the last 10 minutes of any game. If they were 1-0 up or a goal up, there was an inevitability about what was going to happen, and we got rid of that. And I've been reasonably comfortable when Villa have been carrying a goal lead into the last 10 minutes over the last season or so. But now... Yes.
That's why it was such a it was a shock, wasn't it? Ben?
Yeah, after the Spurs game, after this one, you're now thinking, actually, we're starting to get a bit brittle now with this formation. So will it become psychological in the immediate future? This is one of the issues.
You would hope not. I mean, the big thing, obviously, when you lose a game in the manner of that, obviously, when you're asking why, and a lot of it with game management is mentality and, you know, your senior players and your leadership. And I'd put the question to them that, well, who stood up in that 10 minutes? You know, McGinn's your vice-captain. I think Ming's head had kind of slightly gone. I think Ings still counts as a senior player. Who is the guy who is marshalling that and saying, you know, that the difference, and I am going to go there, the difference last season with having Grealish in that side was, although, you know, obviously he was the captain, but what he gave you was, regardless of running ability, he'd just put his foot on the ball, wouldn't he? He'd pick the ball up in the left-back position and go, all right, foul me. It's having that sort of little bit of nous to go, I know how to shut the game down here.
Yeah, you're talking about the guy who gave the ball away on the edge of the box against Spurs and gave them
a
winner.
Yeah, that's an isolated incident. But generally speaking, he was the guy at that moment in the game. You say, give it to Grealish, he'll draw a foul, and that just takes all the pressure off. We didn't have that sort of nous to take any pressure off. It was like hacked clearances, and we just lost our heads in general. Because if in doubt, I mean, Mings didn't do it a couple of times in the first half. Generally, he is good. There was a few occasions where he just thought, just slam it in the stand and regroup. Because actually, for most of the game, when Villa had their shape, Wolves weren't playing through it.
Start of the game, Phil.
Yes, well, Villa have now lost 6 out of 8 Premier League games when John McGinn has scored.
Yeah, ouch. So he shouldn't be allowed to shoot anymore. That's my We should sub target off around the 70-minute mark and not allow McGinn to shoot, and I think that's a recipe for success. Definitely more points on the board if those two rules are implemented by Smith for future weeks. How are we finishing this off?
Who was shitting?
We did have a burning questions, if you want, in the Discord.
Fuck the burning questions. I just want to know, if you're lining up the first 11, and I'm bringing back the hand pistol again, and you've got to shoot one of them, who is it?
I'm shooting Twanzebe. I'm sending them back to United as well. I just think that he just wasn't at the races. I mean, I don't understand what the players that weren't in international duty did through the week, because they were the ones that were the slackest on the day. I mean, that pass across his own box that let Hwang in the first half was Twanzebe as well. And just from that moment, you thought, he's not in it. His head is not in it. And so it proved the rest of the game, because I didn't see him do anything really of note the whole game.
He had a bad game. I would go with... I'm going to go with Buendia, actually. Even though, actually, I liked what he did. I think you haven't gone away on international duty and you're flagging. If you're not match fit to get through 90 minutes at this point, you think, what on earth's going on there?
What is 30 million plus worth of player if you can't get through 90 minutes? Seems a bit... Yeah, I mean, at the moment, I mean, we said in that something for the weekend that what that... 100 million that we spent, the value, if it was a share price, stands at, I think that's gone down even more, because one of your 30 million guys can't even get through 90 minutes. I mean, Ings got a goal, what we, you know, obviously we paid him for, and Bailey's still injured. So that 100 million that replaced Grealish, we're not really getting good value from that at the moment. And that's a concern, because that was going to be the difference of improvement from last season to this season. Well,
let's be honest, it still can be. It's still relatively early days, and we've seen signs from all of them that they've clearly got it, but you need to get some level of consistency across the team. It's just not there yet from anyone, really. I can't think of anyone who's been consistent this season.
I'm just saying, as it stands, if you take a step back, you still know that Villa aren't playing with a full deck, and you know one of their top guys in that 100 million, Liam Bailey, hasn't even started yet. So and Sanson, who was expected to feature in that centre and midfield, has been out as well. So there is that to come. I mean, we said early doors that we expect to finish better than we start this season. But Smith, this is the question, and we'll only find out the answer if when Bailey comes back, is if this 3-5-2 was a formation to compensate for our injury situation and make the best of what we've got, or is it the way we're planning to play most of these games of the season?
Mm.
All will be revealed soon. Right, before we go, I just want to say a massive thank you to the Mailman Said patrons and the new recruits for signing up to support the show. Will Thornton, David Innert, Patrick Bauer, Andrew Guest, and also Kayan Barlas for signing on as an annual patron. If you sign on annually, you get 2 months free, which is 15% off. And also thanks to Chris Barker for upping his pledge. If you sign on as a Mailman Said patron, you get access to the extra shows on the Patreon podcast channel, and also access to Match Club, which will be up and firing on Friday night for the Arsenal game. So do join us Friday evening. Bring a drink.
Yeah, that should be a lively one.
We will go on into the evening in full Match Club style. So make sure you join us there. Don't forget to follow the podcast as well on whatever podcast app you use. And until next time, any final words?
Well, I suppose it's a couple of interesting games, isn't it, now, with Arsenal and West Ham. So you'd hope to be in and amongst. So we're going to get a real gauge now of, obviously, you know, Wolves, Arsenal, West Ham, of where this team is actually at. You know, we don't judge them on sort of Chelsea away, etc., but we do judge them on these games.
Yeah, well, I judge them on the Wolves game, and I'm quite frankly, I'm appalled. There's no mitigating circumstance for being 2-0 up with 10 minutes to go, with being able to beat a Wolves team that really weren't showing that much with what you had, and we had a decent team. I mean, people were rubbing their hands when they saw the lineup before the game, and at 2-0, it looked more likely to be 3. If there was going to be 3 more goals in that game, I'd have probably betted on 4-1, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
So, very, very disappointing, and... I thought hopefully Spurs would be the wake-up call, but this definitely should be a wake-up call.
Yeah.
And it's 4 points lost.
Yeah, I'm just going to add this game to the list of wounds that will never heal. So that's right. I'm just like a checkerboard of these scars.
And even the local derby thing, I didn't even factor that in.
It certainly didn't feel like a derby at the game.
Could have been any team that did that to us. The main thing that hurt was just throwing away a game that you're 2-0 up and cruising to a comfortable 3 points. A 3 points that we need at this stage because, you know, we're over a fifth of the season gone and we're milling around in a position where it's no different from where we were finished last season.
Yeah, we're just looking capable of gaining a little bit of momentum. I know some of the fixtures probably haven't helped. We're kind of clunky and spluttering would probably be the best way to describe us at the moment.
Right, anyway, until next we meet, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.